Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Austin. And guys, you know, it seems like every week I do these discussions and it's like right after, you know, right after I finish up with work, I got like an hour, you know, I got to open the call and record the intro that you guys are listening to right now and everything. Man, it always just seems like the weirdest crap goes wrong. And it's always on the days I have to sit down and talk to a guest. It's never the easy path of like, hey, I got off work early today and I can just sit and chill and collect my thoughts. And no, like I was like getting cleaned up and everything. And the drain plug on my bathroom drain broke. So now that doesn't work. Managed to get the plug out so that you can still use the sink and everything. But like now, as soon as I finish recording with this, I have to go take care of that. And maybe that's a good topic for a separate discussion. It's like skills around the home. How are you going to survive around your own home? Because it is funny to me when I have people tell me that they can't do stuff for themselves, or I have like friends and stuff who I observe that can't function on their own without paying for services or I don't want to say like luxuries, because I think for many of us the definition of luxury is different, right? So but I mean all the same, I think you guys all have your own definitions. You can kind of draw your own conclusion as to what a luxury might be, and people that they can't live without it. And it's not like they can't live without it, like they'll be miserable without it. Like they literally, people can't live without their, I don't know, without their Roomba, you know? It's like, dude, just sweep your own floors. I think those things work on carpet too. So just vacuum and then sweep your own floors. So you don't have to have a Roomba like that. I mean, that's kind of a mundane example, but I mean like basic plumbing repair or basic woodworking and repair or masonry repair, like some of that requires some pretty specialized tools and stuff. But if you think every time something goes wrong around your own home, you're going to call some kind of specialist contractor and pay a couple $100s. Like, I mean, some of it, sure, like HVAC equipment and stuff like that, you know, your furnace, your air conditioner, there's some basic things you can do. I've certainly repaired my own home air conditioner before. I've done maintenance on my own home furnace before. Yes, I've done some masonry work and repair. Yes, I've done some, unfortunately, electrical work, all those things, right? But man, and we're getting like way too into it. Maybe that's a whole separate discussion. But you guys, this week, we're getting into something. And I apologize for going down that rabbit hole, but man, is it frustrating sometimes. This week, we are getting into a topic which has become very, very popular in the community. And I have almost purposely, not even almost, actually purposely stayed away from it. And here, until now. And it's not because I don't like it. It's not because I think that there's, there's no value to it. You know, it's just that we, and you guys know what I'm talking about. We as a community, like when we find this, the new shiny thing that seems to, in whatever context, provide a ton of value to us, we flock to it, right? Like moths to a flame. We run to it and we're like, hey, this is the new hot thing. We all have to be able to do this. And if you aren't one of like the 15% that are really well versed in it, you're going to die. And then you get like, I don't know, those like the guys that are, they go spend a bunch of money learning that one thing. And then in like, you know, a year's time, it's almost irrelevant or it's debunked or, you know, whatever. And you guys know what I'm talking about, but we're getting into this week, we're finally getting into drones. And we've had some discussions on this podcast, where we mention drones and we talk about drones, but we've never really had a dedicated discussion around the employment of drones and the impact that can have. I know right now, and here's why I find it like really cringy in some regards, in some avenues, is because guys are like, oh, did you check out that sick footage from Ukraine? That dude gets totally smoked by a drone. And it's like, okay, maybe we could start, you know, taking some lessons from these videos instead of just watching them as basic, you know, snuff films, watching these drones, you know, drop bombs on people. And like, yeah, but I mean, I get it. In some contexts, people are trying to use it as a learning tool to show that we're witnessing and experiencing an evolution in warfare, right? So drones used to be, during the global war on terror, right? Drones were massive, massive devices that had to be, you know, launched and landed at airfields, and they carried, you know, military grade payloads and things like that. And there was a pilot that was running them from hundreds and thousands of miles away. And now we're seeing the drone technology leveraged, you know, from a single user, maybe a couple hundred yards away, maybe 1,000 or so. I don't know what the limitations of these devices are, with a headset. deployed in the field for reconnaissance purposes, yes, for attack purposes. We're even starting to see these drones utilized in ways like in the movie, whatever the hell, the Divergent series, the third film in that series, we have like the little disc drone thingies that like dock on and off of people's backs and they can like generate a shield and stuff. So obviously, I mean, I think shield technology is a bit away from, you know, being a realistic thing at this point. But we're starting to see those kinds of applications really start to manifest before our very eyes. And it's very interesting. And I think that we've seen enough now that, you know, it's safe to say this isn't going anywhere. We're starting to adopt this into the military in squad level applications, not just air support. We're using it in CQB applications and law enforcement teams and agencies. And yes, of course, the civilian space is becoming probably one of, I would dare to assume, one of the foremost experts on how to apply these drones, because we've been using them, the recreational sized drones, and there's probably a different name for it. I don't know. We'll get into that, I'm sure. Civilians have been using these for years and years and years as recreational items and toys, and now you're starting to see the uses and applications they have when paired with some other remote technologies that have also been in civilian hands for decades, right? So this should be a really cool discussion. Before I get into this week's episode, I want to take a few minutes here and I want to tell you guys about our supporting sponsors here at Prepared Mindset. We work with some absolute just great, great companies out there in the industry that sell wonderful products, have tremendous customer service, and we want to make sure you guys are aware of them because they support us, and without them, we wouldn't have this podcast every week, but also because they're good companies. These are good people you can go spend your money with, and you're going to get a great product, great service, and a great experience from. And I know there's a ton of companies out there that say they do that, but not everyone does, and all of these companies we're about to talk about, I was a customer of before I was ever a partner, and that certainly starts with Custom Night Vision, you guys. Our oldest partner, our oldest sponsor, CustomNightVision.com. That is the website. And these guys are tremendous. They carry a full stock lineup of night vision devices. And when we're sitting here this week having this drone discussion, we talk about capabilities. There is perhaps no greater capability that one sole individual can carry with them than night vision, unless you can see in the dark, which I can. And if you can't see in the dark like me because you didn't eat your carrots, go to CustomNightVision.com and check out everything they got going on. So whether it's a monocular device like, yes, a PVS-14, which is an outstanding option, and people want to, you know, turn their nose up at it like, oh, it's just a single tube, what are you going to do with that? It's still an incredibly effective solution out in the field. I ran one for almost a year before moving up into dual tubes. There's tons of options out there, and Custom has many, many, many of them in stock. White phosphor, green phosphor, Elbit tubes, L3, NNVT, Photonis. And if you have no idea what any of that means, you don't know what a PVS-14 is other than it's one tube, and you have no idea what the rest of what I just said was, that's fine, you guys. You can head on over to the CustomNightVision.com website, and they have a chat function built into the lower right-hand corner. So if you're looking at buying night vision and you have no idea what the heck, which way is up, you can talk to one of the team members there. You can talk to Ben or Kevin or Trevor and ask them, and they're going to give you guidance and advice based on what your greatest concerns are. Hey, I really need to see this far, or I want to see this far. And they're going to tell you, hey, you want to go with this tube or maybe this tube because here's the pros, here's the cons. Maybe you save a little money here. Here's the housing we recommend. Maybe if you're getting into dual tube, you know, binocular housings, they have a full lineup of binocular housings stocked at all times on the website. And guys, even if you already have your night vision, maybe you bought it used secondhand or something, Custom can still help you out because they stock Team Wendy helmets, they stock lights, lasers, Wilcox mounts, all the good stuff. So literally they are your one-stop shop for everything night vision. You guys, one last time here, it is CustomNightVision.com. Also want to say a huge thank you to our friends over at Orion Training Group, you guys. OrionTrainingGroup.com, that is the website, and just I cannot say enough how much I love learning from these guys. I was actually just messaging with Jason Ransom earlier today on an unrelated issue, but tremendous dudes. Love learning from them, have taken several classes from the cadre, and if you guys know about Orion, you probably haven't heard too many bad things about them. They're incredible instructors with a deep passion, not only for you know, the field craft and the CQB and the shooting and things, but for being a better teacher, a better educator. They study how to be more effective and they listen to their students. It's they, you know, they do AARs at the end of every class. They are invested in you. You guys, it's an outstanding experience. Head on over to OrionTrainingGroup.com. You can check out the entire course calendar. I know they have classes in, I think, Tennessee coming up later this year. I know there's one, I don't know the dates exactly. I know they're in Houston. They spend a lot of time south of the Mason-Dixon because they're based out of Louisiana. But I know I see comments and stuff online all the time. Hey, do you guys ever come up to insert state? And as long as you don't live in like California, New York, or New Jersey, there, if there's a will and a way, and as long as you guys have a facility, get in touch with Jared, get in touch with Jason. Those guys can set something up. They can come up to your neck of the woods. They come up here to Michigan, you know, once a year for a great class. We love it. You guys head on over to OrionTrainingGroup.com. Get in touch with them and check out all of the listings they have available for a class near you. And last but certainly not least here, we want to say a very big thank you to 100 Concepts. You guys, they're a huge supporter of ours. I think actually they may be a longer supporter than us than Custom Night Vision, but tremendous group of dudes over there. The company motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. And I mean, what's cooler than that? You know, they make tremendous products, you guys. They're affordable. Any one of us can afford the products they're putting out there that can make us all more capable in the field. So whether that's something as, you know, relatively simple as a helmet scrim or a pack scrim, it's going to help us break up the outlines of our bodies and our head out in the field, in the bush, right? So that we're not just looking like a big shiny green blob out there, right? Or you can look into things like their light caps, the scope caps, their pro scope cap that builds an anti-reflective device into the scope cap mechanism so you don't lose one or the other by running that device. And if you don't need the cover, they also have their hex cap series. So that's the same awesome hex technology that they have to reduce glare, to reduce, you know, glint in you know, war zone terms on your red dot optics. They have a whole lineup of the hex caps for everything from the 509T to your T2 clones and beyond, you guys. Again, it's 100concepts.com. Tremendous company. Super, super proud to partner with these guys. Head on over to the website today and pick up some gear for yourself. So huge, huge thank you to all of those companies for their support. We love working with them. They make tremendous products and are very well respected in the industry. We're proud to partner with every one of them. But getting into this week's discussion, we are talking about drones, you guys, and my guest this week is Rob from Constellation Response. Rob and I have connected a few times on social media. Constellation is very, I'm not going to say heavy into the drones, but they post a lot of drone content, a lot of information about it. And it's something that, you know, we have, like, I don't know. Like, I have no clue about how to be effective with a drone. I could certainly go out and buy one. Like, I have money, right? And a debit card. I could go buy one. But past that, you know, sort of fumbling my way through how to use a drone in the most literal of senses, I don't know how I would be effective with a drone, and I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of the nuance and the detail behind that. Like I said a couple moments ago, this is the future of warfare as we know it, and it's not limited to the battlefields across, you know, the other side of the globe in Ukraine, right? As we see a lot of the crap that's going on in the news every day, right? We see these riots and these protests that are breaking out because of the ICE raids out in California right now, and as at the time of this recording, they're literally busing hundreds of Marines. At least that's what I read online. I don't know how true that is. Please don't smoke me in the comments for getting that one wrong. I know we are dispatching more efforts over there. Gavin Newsom, I guess, hasn't felt the need to deploy the National Guard, at least the last that I had heard. But I think we're sending actual armed servicemen out there to help deal with those issues, because we're seeing things like cars being lit on fire and, you know, of course, the ever popular bricks, you know, the pallets of cinder blocks being dropped near ICE detention centers and whatnot. We're starting to see the whole playbook bust out from the Summer of Love, which a lot of us, we anticipated this, right? Back when the election came around and Trump took office at the beginning of the year, we anticipated that once the weather got warm, we were going to see tensions rise and potentially more shitty behavior. Let's just call that what it is, right? Shitty behavior. But to bring it back to the original point here, in these areas with things like this, I'd be willing to bet money, right, that drones are being employed here, not only by folks in those federal agencies and task forces, police departments and whatnot for reconnaissance purposes and things like that, but I'm assuming that probably also to find those teams and things like that. I'm sure they're being utilized by the opposition because it's open source technology, right? There's no restrictions. I mean, there are to some degree with drones over certain sizes and heights of flight and things like that. There are some, not that everybody cares about those or adheres to them, but we're seeing these tools leveraged and employed in ways that are giving advantages on the battlefield to the roadways, you know, depending on where you're using them. So it's very much the way of the future, and the future is now, old man. Like, let's be real, right? So this is something, like I said, I don't have any experience in, so I'll be very interested to hear, you know, what's going on with drones? How much of an advancement have we seen? I mean, anything really. I am a total noob when it comes to this. So anything and everything is going to be of great interest to me. I think that a lot of you guys have been asking about this for several months. And we're finally getting around to bringing a conversation to you where we can, you know, intelligently talk about it, talk about the impacts, the uses, and you know, also get away from that stuff and talk about the benefits it has for our community as a whole. What good things this technology is doing for us. So it should be an outstanding discussion by all means. I think you guys are really, really going to dig it and very much enjoy it. So with that, let's get over to my conversation with Rob. Here we go, guys. Rob, man, welcome to the podcast. How are you, sir?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me, man.
Dude, yeah, I'm honestly very intrigued to hear what you have to say because I don't know anything about drones, like at all. I was talking about it, like when I recorded the intro before we sat down. I'm like, I don't know shit about drones. Like, I mean, I can probably figure it out. Right, put the headset on, you can fly it, but I don't know anything about drones, and it's a huge. What has it been like the last 4 or 5 years? I think it's really caught traction in like the preparedness, the 2A community that, you know, I mean, probably more than that. I'm willing to bet it's probably more than that. But, you know, in the scope of our discussion, that's what we're seeing. So let's start with you. We'll talk about you for a little bit and then we'll get into it. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners. Tell them who you are, man.
Yeah. So I'm Rob. I'm running a company called Constellation Response that I founded a little over a year ago. And really the goal of that company was to solve the problem of capabilities with prepared citizens. So like we've really solved the problem with like firearms and guns. Like you can get, like we both run ADMs, which are phenomenal mm-hmm. guns, and they outclass what most grunts are probably issued in the, you know, in the Marines by a lot. And so that those problems are really solved, but where we're really far behind as civilians, I think, is like the networking side of things. And so that started off with me getting into comms, and especially as like cell phones start going down more and more frequently, just for absolutely no reason. And there's stuff like, you know, natural disasters, like we had Helene last year that was really awful and affected a ton of people. And just seeing the response to that, being really lacking in a lot of ways. That's where I'd already been working on this problem before and trying to find good products that were solving it. And I just was really unimpressed with what was offered traditionally. So like traditionally, if you're thinking off-grid comms, you're thinking like ham radio, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I knew.
Yeah. So the thing that I really didn't like about that, obviously though, like if you start looking into it, you're like, oh, I got to get a license in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you're like, these radios cost how much? And they are, for what they are, like they do run for like a day, and that's good. But like if you're in a low power situation, that can be pretty bad. And also just the capability that a lot of them offer is just not that, you know, impressive, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at like really at the end of the day, like if you're in thick vegetation, you're like, you're lucky to get a mile of range out of them, right? And so it's not really a thing that you can do. Like I have friends in my mutual aid group here in Austin all over the city, and I can't hit them with traditional ham radio. But as I was actually trying to figure out the solution to this problem, it just so happened LoRa, other open source products around LoRa technology were really coming into the fold. So for listeners that don't know, this is basically a radio that is like a walkie textie, and it uses the same frequencies that like your IoT devices use. So like your Ring doorbell, it's encrypted, it's a, you know, and high data feed. But it's also you didn't get a license to go set that Ring doorbell up, right?
Right.
So the cool thing with these radios is they're license free, they are encrypted, and they have really good range. And the way they work is they kind of hop from one thing to the other. So kind of the cut over to where drones started to get in the fold for me is that kind of in radios, the higher you can get, the more range you're also going to get, and range is always the key. And so if you have a lower radios are lightweight, and they're also like really good on power, so you can power one up on a really tiny battery for like 8 hours, same amount of time you'd have a ham radio with a much larger battery. And so if you can put one up on a drone, stick that drone up 400 feet above ground level, you're in a really
Oh,
good situation.
wow. Yeah, I never even thought about that.
And so that's what was really interesting to me on the drone side of things. And I started to kind of look at what the options were out there, and everything was made in China. I was really unimpressed. I didn't want to like, yeah, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I'm impressed by what Chinese drones are doing these days. Like, they're phenomenal products, but like, I don't really want to support communists that much with my store, you know?
What? Well, that's so
And yeah,
weird.
so hot take for the podcast is I don't support communism. I don't think you should either.
What a novel concept, kids. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, it's wild. So I was trying to find American-made products, and more I'm trying to find like people that are doing really cool stuff again, with small companies. And so through another US-made drone maker that I had been following online for a while, he introduced me to Second Order Effects, and they make a really phenomenal platform. It's a extremely efficient drone. It can lift a whole lot of weight. They're all military backgrounds, so most of their background is what you think of when it comes to drones.
Okay,
So
yeah.
it's, you know, so putting warheads on foreheads and all that stuff. So but that said, their drone isn't necessarily made just for that. It's not made to be necessarily attritable. It is at a price point for the military to where it's considered attritable, or basically like a one-way, you know, trip for a drone.
Do you know what that price point is? Just out of, not because I care necessarily about the drone, but like, at what point does the government look at a piece of equipment and go, "Eh, fuck it," and if it blows up, it blows up.
I mean, well, you look at what they spend on missiles, it's like millions of dollars, right? And
I think
so
that's a
like
really good
the
point. Yeah. I
yeah, and that's like
guess
all
that's setting the
attritable
bar
stuff.
pretty high. Yeah.
And the thing that's crazy with like, so a lot of the drones that you see in a lot of these programs, and again, you'll start seeing Auerbach a lot more because we are really talking to a lot of members in the military, which is really cool. The kind of the primes, I don't know if you know about like defense contracting a whole lot,
Only a
but
little bit. Yeah.
okay. So basically there's, you know, like there's like Boeing and Raytheon and all these huge corporations,
Huh,
like L3. They're massive, and they're called the primes, and they're really the people that get the lion's share of government contracts. So like then you have like other people that are breaking into it, like Palantir and Anduril, and those are like non-prime vendors. So those are kind of the landscape of it. So I work with, obviously I'm not working with Boeing to develop a drone. But these
that's
guys are
probably a
great.
good thing. You might get unalived. I mean,
So like,
they don't have a
yeah,
great
exactly.
track record.
The non-Boeing drones actually fly and are reliable. So like that's kind
You
of what we're looking
go.
for. So we are I'm trying to find like these smaller companies that are breaking in, and at $1,500, that's like, that is literally the throwaway price of a drone, of something. Like they're using stuff from Anduril that's $10,000-$20,000 or more. Granted, there's some different electronics in there that then raise that price to make it a little bit more survivable on the battlefield. But in
Sure.
terms of something that's reliable and using a lot of the tech that you see in Ukraine going on right now, they're using the same stuff or better stuff at $1,500, and they're getting the job done. So, yeah.
That's actually not a completely unreasonable price point when you start considering. I mean, it is a lot of money. You know, I'm not going to say that $1,500 isn't a lot of money, but when you look at what we will, as a community, what we're willing to spend $1,500 on, that's like in lieu of your next LPVO or in lieu of your next AR-15 if you already have like nine, you know. Or I mean, I have a hard time. Like, I love the guys, actually done by you and Custom Night Vision, down in Houston. Great dudes. People should buy night vision. But if you're looking at your option, you buying another set of night vision or a good drone, like, $1,500 suddenly in the context of things isn't that bad. It really isn't. Especially because I don't know a ton about drones, but I've heard that you get what you pay for. We're in that like that developmental transitional phase for these devices, right? We're like, yeah, if you buy a $150 drone, you're getting a $150 drone. Like it's gonna be fun and it's not gonna be able to do a lot for you, and you're probably not gonna have everything you want. So
Yeah,
that's a
great,
reasonable
great
price.
practice platforms, because like that's the thing that like with FPV style drones, they are really hard to fly. They're not like a DJI that kind of flies itself. They are so like honestly, like I do recommend people like they'll reach out to me, and they don't necessarily they can't make a training session that 2OE is putting on. That's actually one thing I really like about 2OE is they believe in training the individual person. But like if someone reaches out, they're like, hey, I can't make the training session, but I do want to get into drones. Do I need to buy an hourglass like right now? And I'm like, don't buy an hourglass. Like here, go to this other site, which go get a cheap Chinese drone because you're going to crash it a lot. And then also get a simulator and spend a lot of time in the simulator. And it's a skill set. It's like it requires dry firing, and that's what I call like the simulator time. It's like dry firing your drone. And it is a real skill set. Just like if you want to practice CQB or do something like that. And so. Get into those lower price drones, and then go to something that's really like the Ferrari of drones. Or I mean, if you want to dive in and learn how to take it all the way, like in a weekend, if you don't have that kind of time, 2OE does do training, and it's really incredible. They'll take you from basically zero knowledge of how to fly all the way up to a competent operator in 1 weekend. So.
I mean that's a pretty, I mean if you look in the scope of skill development, that's actually kind of incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's why I was so like keen on becoming a partner with them and be able to resell both the training side of things and also their actual physical products, because it's the skill set and the learning curve is so steep with these that if you again for most people like I mean I got a family I got kids I got things I got to do and there's also bills to pay and there's an expense to go into training and flying stuff. Man, like the time savings of like, hey, I'm not constantly just buying new drone parts right now. I'm actually able to get up and fly and put real time in. It's a legit savings.
Well, and the training piece of it's interesting because I didn't really know that there were companies out there offering dedicated training on these platforms. Like it kind of makes sense when you think about it, but I know it just doesn't get talked about. You know, I mean everything else we do in this space, like you can take a comms class, right? You learn how to do radio shit. You can take certainly med courses. CQB, small unit tactics, precision carbine, gas gun. You mean everything, breaching, you know? So I guess it makes this, it makes sense that we get to this point. Are they one of the only companies that are doing this, or I mean, are you seeing
I
more
think
traction in that realm?
I'm definitely seeing more people try to enter that space. The trick is like there's only really like maybe a couple of companies that are really doing what they're doing, right? So there's very few people that have the background that they have of former military and specifically former special forces, like the kind of guys that are going to be really using this stuff a lot. And also have this other background of when they got out of the service, several of them got into drone racing. And so they're really good pilots. And then they also build their own drone. So it's kind of the trifecta of experience and also knowing how to supply that. So like part of the training, like the crash course is really pretty basic. Like I will say it's designed to get you up in the air, but it's designed to also like when you're part of flying is crashing. And so part of that training is to learn how to repair and get that drone back up in the air. And so like you get the soldering iron out and you actually do it that weekend. Like when you go crash and it's really bad, you're gonna get your drone back up, which is pretty rad.
That's
So
okay. Now that is practical skills that you that's awesome that they incorporate that repair piece in. That's great. Instead of just teaching you, hey, here's how you fly it. It's like, here's how you keep the whole thing going.
Well, and that's the thing, like, you see a lot of people they'll modify like a DJI, like a Mavic or something like that, right? To be able to do payload drop. And that's really throwing off the systems on that Mavic to do what it's designed to do. Like it's not gonna be able to auto fly as well. Also like Mavics, like they can, like DJI can turn off your ability to fly that drone at any moment. And if you also don't like have internet access, sometimes it'll just tell you like, hey, you haven't connected to our cloud service recently. So like you can only fly 50 feet away from yourself and only 10 feet off the ground.
Wait, I'm sorry. What? They can like remote into your shit and basically ground you?
Yeah, it hasn't flown home recently, or it hasn't flown home recently, so it's not going to let you fly. Because it's like, I don't know if you're licensed or what you can do, so like, I don't know you anymore. You know, I'm gonna hang out.
I don't know if I love that. So wait, because DJI does a lot of electronic shit. They do like microphones and stuff, and they got their finger in a lot of shit. But is that a Chinese company?
Yes, it's a Chinese company. So,
Yeah, that's even more concerning. I mean,
the spoiler alert with drones is, it's made in China. They're all made in China, except for like again, like legitimately American-made products. The only thing that, like, for instance, on the Hourglass, there are some parts from China, and those are the motors, because the motors, like the biggest thing, like fear I have with like a conflict with China is that how predominant drones have gotten. We can't produce motors here at cost of any sort of reasonable cost. So if we were to source American-made motors, the cost of, or I say we, if second order effects sourced American-made motors, I've looked and I've tried to price them out, because I'm like, hey, I want a fully American-made drone here. The
Sure.
cost of four motors made here in the US is another $1,500.
Good Lord. So you effectively double the price of the platform.
That's just at parts cost, so that's not even counting like the
The
cost
margin
of,
that they're and everything. Yeah, that's wild, dude.
it's totally insane. And so it's just like, all right, we're kind of stuck with Chinese motors for now. Soon as we can make motors literally anywhere else in the world, every drone manufacturer that I know that's making stuff here in the US, they're all going to be sucking up that supply, because it's such a high demand thing, right? So if you're trying to figure out a new business venture, by the way, probably drone motors made here in the US at a reasonable price,
Anybody
that's the way to
listening
go.
has got a couple million in venture capital that they're willing to they're
Yeah,
willing
and if you're the
to
kind of person that can solve that problem, please hit me up, rob at constellationresponse.com, because I will connect you with the people that are going to buy up all your supply.
Yeah, I mean, hey, there's an opera there's a yeah it's a growing market right there. That I mean,
Seriously.
but the, that that's fucking wild that I get that there's the because the Bluetooth feature, right? Because that's what obviously what connects back to the controller and everything with the drones. But the DJI can go in and just shut your shit down and just lock you out of something that you've paid for, which then begs to question what else can they do? And I don't want to get too conspiracy theory about it, but like that's and it I get the concern over the licensing and you know the FAA or whatever, but like dude. That's so shitty. And I think I had heard somebody else say that to me, like, oh, yeah, they can lock out your drone. That's,
Well, there's
why,
like, when you hear that, you think to yourself like,
man?
oh, they can lock out my drone, like they can lock out my Holosun optic, right? Like, oh yeah, but are they gonna do it? And the answer on the drone side is, yeah, they actually do it a lot, because they are complying with either some regulation, or they are just doing it so they can connect to their cloud service. Like, it's a service that they're really selling at the end of the day, for that price, that lower cost of the drone. And they are absolutely on their enterprise level stuff. Like, so for like farmers who are using this for like crop management and stuff, it's like a really big booming industry. There's a reason why they have attacked and tried to get those drones at such a low cost. It's because they want to know what American farming is looking like right now. It's part of an intel
Oh.
bomb. So it's literally, when you're using a Chinese drone, you are, when I said like, hey, I don't want to support communism, like that was a joke, but you literally are. You're helping like America's enemies learn more about what we're all about and what we got going on over here in a way that like they couldn't do with satellites or any other military tech.
Yeah, I mean, is that are do you is the I guess the community moving away from those brands in particular then? Like, or is it what are you seeing?
I'll be super honest with you. What I'm seeing, I'm pretty disappointed. So JD Vance just like did a press tour with the Marines. Just a couple months ago,
I saw
it's
that,
like
yeah.
DJI goggles on his face.
Oh,
It's like
cool.
Chinese
Right.
drones.
Big old logo across the front and everything.
Our military force, we're going to buy all of our arms from the enemy that we're trying to shift, the national enemy. And I say that like, I hope we don't go to war. I hope they're not an actual enemy, by the way,
Oh,
just
yeah, of
caveating.
course.
But like, our posture right now is looking at the Pacific right now, and specifically China. And we're like, cool, we're gonna go fight you with the stuff we're gonna buy from you if you'll keep selling it to us, right? And then they just posted, had another press release that went out, and they were using Fat Shark goggles, which are not DJI anymore, but they're still Chinese. And so it is really a real concern, of whether or not, we're gonna be able to keep up with them technologically and on the drone front. We gotta really offshore or move that production away to China.
Yeah, it's a it's and that's the difficult battle, right? Because none of that stuff changes overnight. I mean, this is they are pre-positioned economically, and from a manufacturing standpoint to be well insulated in the market for, decades to come. And that's the shit part is that if we want to, like you were saying, American-made motors double the cost. They know that and they're playing into it. It's smart. You can't take that away from them, but at the same time, we have to try to be a little more concerned, I think, as and certainly not just in the drone space. Like it's really easy to be like, oh yeah, just don't buy your Chinese drones. Like, all right, dude, well, stop buying your HoloSun Red Dot because that's also part. And people look at that, and those are a lot cheaper than $1,500. And guys go, well, I just don't want to spend $600 on a name point.
Well,
I get
and
it.
they're good. Like that's the thing is, I'm not going to argue with you on the quality front of any of these Chinese products anymore. The big concern though too isn't just the fact that you're like, I mean, for one, you are supporting their R&D development and they're ballooning their at the end of the day, even with optics and stuff like that. But you're also when you're doing that, like we've offshored our ability. Like it used to be, I'll put it this way. So like in the manufacturing process, it used to be we would do all the big brain stuff here. We'd figure out the molds and how to figure out how to make the part and do all the stuff, right? And we'd ship it off to the third world and they'd go like, hit the button, assemble it, send it back, right? It's the opposite now. Like they send us the dumb stuff and they figure out the tooling and all the molding and how to do the things that build the things that we need. They do that all over in China now. So I don't know if you saw like Tim Cook just recently said, like, yeah, we used to go to China because of the cheap labor, but not for the last like decade or so. Now we go there because the tooling, the ability to make an assembly line is so much greater there, that we just don't have the expertise here anymore.
Yeah,
So
all the
Apple,
manufacturing infrastructure, because that's what's propped up their whole economy, is that mass manufacturing that we loved for so long. And now it's biting us in the ass. Now we can't get away
Well,
from
yeah, exactly. And so it's just like it is, it's wild, seeing us move that way. And again, too, I'm not going to try to make an argument of like, quality for like quality per dollar, you're going to get it in China. But then the, offshoring, like that cost is really going to have a real cost later on down the line.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a balance to it. I think that, I'm not saying everybody should just stop buying them altogether overnight because then you start, I mean, it's like it, to some degree, right? Cutting off your nose to spite your face. I think it's a process over time. I would certainly rather have more people here stateside learning how to use these devices if it meant, hey, we're buying them from the number one, manufacturer of those tools. Maybe just don't buy like 10 of them to outfit you and all your buddies. Maybe just get like two or one and then save up for something good and move away from it.
I'm not gonna like fault somebody if they've got like 10 ARs and they put a HoloSun on like on a couple of those ARs just because they're like, listen, I gotta have an optic on this one. I'm not gonna be like, nah, that's a terrible choice. Yeah, if you're like I've gotten down to actually two ARs now that they're kind of purpose-built. One of them has a HoloSun
You
optic on
can
it
only
and it's
shoot
about
one
to
at a
be.
time. I mean, it's not that big a deal.
Exactly. And so the one of them currently has an HoloSun on it and it's about to get swapped out for an EOTech because I
There you go.
yeah it's
Yeah.
it's one of those things that I just on a personal level I'm like I can't use these things anymore.
I've had okay luck with them. I have a pair of
Oh
509
yeah.
T's, and they're not bad by any means, but it's like one is on a like a Glock 19 that I concealed carry just because it's an enclosed emitter. The other one I piggybacked on a 2-10. So they're not, I mean, I'm trying to phase them out personally. they're not bad. I've not had any issues with them. They're actually quite remarkable. And from a market standpoint, they kind of forced some of the legacy American companies, like I'll say Trijicon, and I'm up here in Michigan. I love Trijicon, but the RMR was only so good for so long, and it's, I mean, it still is, but like you guys have to innovate, and they did. They finally started innovating, but it was only after this is my assumption, they lost that court lawsuit to HoloSun.
Oh no, and that's the thing, man. I cannot argue with, again, the quality levels of all these Chinese products, like really high up there. It's as good, if not better than a lot of cases than what you can get in America in a lot of different sectors. But yeah, it's just one of those things where and it, now that people are starting to move down the innovation chain, like Leupold's also trying to, I don't know if you've seen, they had saw some announcement recently where Leupold said they were going to start re-upping their dot game
Good.
recently. And
Good.
it's like, good, yeah, like we have to make this stuff here again. So
Yeah.
and get it out of China. It's really hard to do. Actually, don't want to like talk about manufacturing for forever, but there's a YouTube channel called Smarter Every Day, and he just talked about he just made a video about like making a grill scrubber and how hard it was to not make it in China. And that'll really like if you guys like I'll go like after this go check that out. But like you would be shocked because like he was trying to find chainmail that was made in the US that was high quality, and he found a supplier that just couldn't meet demand for how much the volume they were doing. So they were like, well, let's try to go to India instead. And when they ordered from India, all the boxes had Chinese on them and they all came from China. So the Indian manufacturers just bought a Chinese product and then just
White
shipped from
labeled
India.
it and shipped it from India. That's a challenge. But on the drone front, with what we're seeing, what like with it, I mean, and yeah, the manufacturing and all that, the origin is, I'm not saying people shouldn't ignore it altogether, but get these tools, learn how to use them. I think we're finding almost like at a daily or weekly basis at this point, new ways to apply these tools in the civilian range of life. And they were just recreational toys is what people looked at them as, I think, for a long time. And I know we were talking before we started recording things like search and rescue, which I had never even thought of as a an application space for something like this. It makes total sense, but I mean, I never thought about it that way. And this is all, again, this is outside of the tactical realm. Right, people are able to leverage these devices now in fascinating ways. A lot of them in the tactical space. I'm not going to lie and say that's not what we all want to hear about. But what are you seeing people most interested in? Is it? I mean, as cool as I'm sure it, like, and I'm going to get a bunch of shit for this. As cool as it is to hang out with your buddies and go shit in the woods for 3 days and fly your drones and act like you're doing a recon on something. What are you seeing people use these for?
Yeah, so like there's a ton of use cases. So like okay, so we already talked a little bit about getting radios up high and being able to boost your range. So there's that aspect of things. The other flip side of the stuff too. So there's another drone that Second Order Effects just launched, and it's got a basically it's a thermal variant. It's got a couple extra features. So one, it comes with a thermal, it's made in the US. The other thing is it's got a camera pod that can tilt down, so it's not like a gimbal like what you're kind of used to seeing on drones, but it can actually like look down. And it's called the Bravo Thermal. Bravo, B. There's another word that starts with B that the military likes to use a lot for classification on stuff. I'll let you read between the lines there, but basically, it can drop stuff as well, so it can drop a payload. And in a military context, that's one thing. In a civilian context for search and rescue, you can load it up with 5 pounds of survival gear and get it out to somebody that like kind of the ranges that they quote from Second Order Effects is 5 miles, 5 minutes with 5 pounds.
Oh,
And
wow.
so, yeah, so you can load up a lot of stuff, put it out to where if you found somebody or if you're searching for somebody and go get them supplies really quickly. And that's really the biggest thing. Like, so again, comms, when you're in a survival situation, if you can drop comms off of someone, maybe there's like flooding in the area and they're gonna have to be on the move, so you might lose them. Getting them a radio, getting them thermal blankets, getting them, medicine, all the stuff that we really saw a lot in Helene, like a reason why they were sending people out into the woods that were just random volunteers, was just hiking up mountains that used to have roads but didn't anymore. And so doing a lot of stuff. So the ability of a drone to be able to go fly a mission and drop some life-saving supplies off is really killer. Yes, so there's that. There's obviously too, like there's just general like situational awareness, and then there's like kind of on the future of drones, there's a ton of stuff that's going to be happening in terms of machine learning, like kind of group, drones that can basically fly themselves. That's kind of coming up on the front. And that actually is something that I think we will pass China on in a very big way very soon.
Is
So.
the is that no is so is that like tied in with AI?
Yeah, so we have a huge lead on other nations on the AI side of things, just because we have like a lot of compute power, we're able to bring it down to a lower cost. So something that you can put on a drone and not be too worried about losing. Like if it's a small fortune you're going to lose with every AI edge, AI, it'd be a problem. But for us, not so much. And because of that, you can do things like the AI can remember what it saw previously. You can go tell it just with text as opposed to like having to fly it. You can go type out a thing, hey, go run this mission and go search this grid square for somebody, and it'll go find them all on its own and be
Now
like, they're here.
that's next level stuff, because then you take that human element out of it, and not even necessarily like the human error part of it, but just you free up that body or that person, that individual, to do something else if you're limited on manpower, if you're out in the I guess out in the field or something, right? Maybe it's a search and rescue team and you don't want somebody who's dedicated to just sitting there wearing a visor or something, right? Now
Yeah,
they can
exactly.
utilize that technology in a way that's going to be effective while still themselves being able to assist in other ways.
Exactly. And like that's the thing that's really setting me kind of on the next gen side of things. Those aren't things that are available like now really from anybody at a decent cost. But it is something that's like it's coming up, and I do think like that'll be or even tell it like, hey, I know you've played with ATAK a little bit. And so like the ability to tell a drone, hey, go scan my area, send me new mapping data, and then plot out any roads that are now no longer feasible. And then you could, ATAK can do turn by turn directions. And so the ability to like send that to your friends, again, the network side, going back over to comms, but you could send that information to your friends of like, hey, my area, there's all these roads are down, but now you can It can figure the machine can figure out how to do turn by turn directions to your like mutual aid group or whatever, so they can rally on your
So can
location.
that, and so I am, again, I'm a total idiot when it comes to a lot of this stuff. But as we're starting to get into things like we mentioned comms, things like using mesh networks and stuff like that to transmit data and things. Is this, do drones leverage in with that whole plan and piece? Because I know my buddies and I are starting to try and, I mean, I'm not, but they are, and I'm just gonna have them tell me what to do. And
Yeah, that's the
like
ideal, right?
set up mesh networks and stuff. Like, so the drone feed will be able to run through the ATAK system the same way. Like, all of that will be able to be tied together, correct? Or is that, I mean, I know there's a limitation on frequencies and things that these devices all run on. I just don't know if those overlap anywhere.
Yeah,
Does this make sense?
no, that totally makes sense. So yeah, like absolutely, these things all should the ideal is that all these things start integrating. And that again too, we're kind of getting out of like what the current capabilities are into what I'm hoping to solve. Like a huge part of what why I started this company is because I'm trying to figure out how to curate and put all these different things together. But yeah, so currently like LoRa, like mesh radios, they're pretty low bandwidth. They're like talking about like kilobits per second. Like that's kind of your range. But there are people that are trying to get up to like 30 megs per second, which is a lot. Like you can stream HD video at that through a mesh network. Maybe not super long range, but you can definitely like for a team get that data through. And so when you have an AI though that's like gathering up all this information, just giving you the information you need, it can do the analysis on the drone and say, okay, cool, here's the map that you had. Here's all the points of interest that are like road blockages or whatever else. And then here's the route from your friend's house to your house now, and it can figure all that stuff out, or send that information to ATAC so that it can figure that out. So yeah, it's pretty like this all is going to start converging here soon. That's kind of the again on the civilian side what I'm hoping to solve. On the military side, they're actively or have solved for it right now,
Oh, that's what I was
so
going to
that's
ask,
pretty
because
wild.
like the military is usually pretty on the cutting edge with this stuff, especially as it pertains to equipping our top like tier war fighters with these tools and things. And I know that's not to make it cringy, but it's like everybody wants to be like their favorite, SEAL or Green Beret or insert favorite military unit. But seeing these things in action, and then we've gotten all of that. I mean, some of it's pretty cringy, but all that footage from Ukraine, where we're seeing these things used in in combat. And yeah, a lot of it's just like, hey, there's a video that cuts to static when it blows up, right? But you're actually seeing drones used to like record, not really record, but you get video feed off them, right? Of battles, of them, running through trenches and stuff. And it's kind of like, it's weird that things we saw maybe 5, 10 years ago, like when I was talking in the intro, I was talking about, I think it's Allegiant. Have you ever seen like the Divergent series of movies, based off those
Oh,
stupid books or whatever? And in the third one, they have like the little hover drones that like dock in the guy's backs, and they like do CQB with the drone hovering around him and shit. And like, I know we're using drones for law enforcement and stuff. We're using them in the CQB capacity to do stuff like indoors and everything, which is fucking wild. I did not realize that we were that, like, up until I just started looking at this in the last probably month, I did not realize that we were already there. I was like, that'd be a really neat idea. And it's like, no, we're already doing it. Like,
Yeah,
fucking
because like,
crazy.
that's the thing is that like when you're doing CQB, like you never know like what's in that corner, right? Like you can't clear the whole room, and so the ability to send to something that's again it's attritable. It may just you may be using it to figure out what's in that corner, but you can go clear a room with that drone and fly around. And then there's the flip side again, payloads. If you're looking for lethality, those things are quite good at it. So I have a feeling that like breaching teams are going to start moving again towards drones, and then not even having drones with the operators behind them, but you'll tell a swarm of drones, go breach that door and clear that house, and they'll go take care of business and either land or whatever. But like there's a ton of tech again on the AI front where they, like I was telling you, they kind of remember where they're at. But when they're remembering where they're at, they can actually create a 3D model of everything. And again, like when we're talking about kind of the networking aspect of things, as these drones are doing that, if they don't have like a payload attached to them, they can start making that map. They can map out the house and the indoor stuff and stream that all to ATAK for you and also tell you where all the bad guys are. So the technological front for this is really getting really high tech really fast. And again, the costs are coming down every single day.
Well, and that's that. I
So
mean, you can almost get to the point then where you can like map out these unknown structures and things real time for teams that are going into, I mean, hostage rescue, barricaded suspect searches, thinking just on the law enforcement side, like, and that's all more information, right? So you can feed that to the team real time. It takes, I don't want to say it takes the danger out of it, but it reduces the level of risk and danger, certainly when you know for sure your layout. You can tell, to some degree what's around the open corners and things, where it's just more information to make a better decision as an operator. And I think that's fucking, I mean, A, it's awesome just to think about like that's a capability that we now have. And it wouldn't even involve somebody like walking at the back of the stack with like a headset on. They could be in a truck or a van or something working at a console. Especially because law enforcement here in the United States loves the surrounding call out shit. They love to fucking, circle around the building and sit there and demand that they come out with their hands up until it's time to send a team in. So I think that's gonna make that a little bit, well, hopefully make it a little bit less shitty for those guys. I know there's a lot of reasons that many people in law enforcement hate that as a practice, but it shows, I think, immensely where the drone value comes in.
Exactly. And like the right now, like so I guess too, let's like kind of bring it back from like even the cutting edge. So like right now, kind of the big like problem to solve with that is kind of barrier and like frequency. So like a lot of the frequencies that they're at are kind of at that Wi-Fi level. So like 2.4 and 5G is what a lot of these things are sending either video feed or control feedback. So they also use like the 915 band as well, but typically, kind of to explain what the implications of that are, is that like, have you ever had someone drive by your house and they're playing really loud music? What are the frequencies that you hear the music? Right, it's always the like lower beats, right? Like you don't hear the high pitched stuff, and that's because higher pitched stuff, higher frequency is going to bounce off things like walls a lot better or a lot easier, and the low stuff tends to pass through. But the problem with the low stuff is that like, for instance, it's really hard to tell what song they were listening to because you're not really getting as much information. Same sort of deal there. Like, but if you cut out the low stuff, you could probably tell what the song was. There's just more information at the lower end or the higher end. So, like, if you're doing like an HD video feed, you want that 5G
That higher end,
if you have, speed or frequency. But it's going to get blocked by like things like walls, right? So same sort of thing. Like when you start losing Wi-Fi access around your house, that's kind of a good idea of what that kind of range for that drone is going to be like. And so that's if you have someone in a car or whatever. Now you can do things like you can mesh or have repeaters set up so that you can get a little bit closer to the source and do some other stuff. But that's kind of the big limiting factor right now is the wireless transmission. But again, once you start going to things that's an AI level drone, you might have a drone that just quickly flies to the house before anyone can do anything about it. And then it gets back out and then it uploads that information on everything it found to you.
Yeah, because these, I
So.
mean, I think these devices, they're not, I was actually blown away the first time I saw somebody doing the, they had like went to a local park and they set up a course and were sitting there in a chair, like a fucking camp chair with the goggles on, flying their drone through these hoops and like cut back. And things like, I don't even know how fast these things go. I've seen, I think on like ESPN2, I've seen some stadium series stuff where they do drone racing and shit. What, I mean, what kind of speeds do these run at typically if you're just like going for it?
Yeah, so I'll put that in perspective. So I don't know, I do a lot of dove hunting. My hit rate on the doves isn't super high. Necessarily, I'll be the first one to admit, I'll limit out for sure, but I go through a lot more shells than I should probably go through. The drones are going like even a low quality drone will go double the speed of that dove. And they're flying either right at you or up above you or across you in ways that you're not going to hit. Sometimes they stop and they kind of hover a little bit, and that's when you got a shot at maybe hitting them. But for all the guys that are like, hey, I'm going to shoot this out of the air with a shotgun, you're just not going to. And this is kind of the bad news. So the hourglass. Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say that's one of like those things. I'm glad you brought that up because now guys are like, oh, this brings the modern shot or the not the modern, the traditional shotgun back into the conversation. We're issued them in the army, and it's like, dude, I've seen the way some guys in the service shoot, and bro, you are gonna need to be like on the fucking money if you think that that shotgun is just gonna be your silver bullet to defeating a drone. Like, yeah, I mean, if it's flying low and straight at you, like, okay, you might have a better shot, but it may also detonate way closer to you. So if that's what you're worried about, like may not be the answer. Like, but people think that, oh, well, I'll just carry a shotgun and that's going to be my anti-drone system. Like, okay, man.
Yeah, and also to put that, so like the hourglass that we sell on the site for is basically it goes we say that it goes 80 miles an hour, but it can go faster. That's us with us governing the motors so they don't burn out. But if you were wanting to go in there and take that governing off, they can go a lot faster. They're just gonna not
Not
last as
last as
long.
long. Yeah.
But also if you get up really high and you come down, if you ever watch drone videos where they're chasing racing. Like race cars, they always start off really high and then they dive down. It's because they're getting that gravity assist to kind of go down and try to hit a faster speed. And then they can go maintain that speed for a really long time. But they can go 60, 70, 80 miles an hour, even if they're a really cheap drone. And then if you're in an hourglass or whatever, and you go up high, you can go a lot faster. I'll just say that. The two of you guys probably won't like it if I give them a higher quote than what we're advertising at, but they can go really fast and they can lift more than what we advertise to. If you're in a pinch. So, at any rate,
Yeah,
it's really
because 80
insane.
miles an hour is so slow. Yeah, you should be really upset about that. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
they are
come on.
also, no, I know it's pretty crazy, but then they're now making drones that are like interceptor drones designed to catch that drone quickly. And those are going in the,
Even
triple
faster.
digits in terms of speed. Yeah, I think there was a video too just recently. Red Bull made a drone that could stay with a Formula One car going around a track at 200 miles an hour. And so, this stuff is again, people are like, hey, I'll get my shotgun. It's just not a good viable option. I think in Ukraine, actually, they've gotten rid of the shotguns already, too. And they started making the Russians at least started making AK rounds that are, I don't know how this works. This might be just pure propaganda that I've seen where they're like, this works. But they're basically AK rounds that have shot built into them. Again, physics, you're spinning that bullet. And so I would imagine that really disperses really quickly. But the goal of it is that you load up 30 of these in a mag and you and your entire squad just fill up all of the air with lead and maybe you'll survive.
Yeah, I mean
But
that's maybe, I don't know. I mean, what I have seen that seems like the most viable way to combat it, however, like vastly more expensive, is these like truck sized and like dishes that will put out microwaves. And the microwaves will basically, I don't know if it fries the electronics or what, but it just like the drones will literally just drop out of the sky. And I think there
Yeah.
was like probably like a 2020 episode on it or something that I found a clip on the internet and I was like, oh, that's actually fucking brilliant if you can afford something that generates microwaves at that scale, which I'm sure is expensive as shit too, but hey, it's the US government, so they can afford
Yeah, like
it.
the US government is like got this huge advantage in the fact that it can just has fucky money. Like it's just like, you know, like
It's our money.
it can like, yeah. And so it's
Yeah.
it is crazy. Like at least like I'd rather go to like the microwave death ray than like, you know, some other stuff that it goes towards if it's my tax dollars at work. But like
100%.
but those like the thing is with a lot of those devices is that they're really limited by atmospheric conditions and a lot of other stuff too. So like it is a real issue. Like it's not like you can just buy a whole bunch of those and put them around like our bases here domestically and try to stop what Ukraine just did in Russia. Because like if it's a cloudy day, those drones might just be able to sail right past. And so there's a whole like there's layers of the protection plan for drones that you really got to figure out. And so it's a really hard problem to solve. I will say this too though, like there is a lot of stuff like on the comm side, if you're familiar with radios already, like you'll take up drones really easily as well, because like you're familiar with how radios and control, like RC radio controlled drones are gonna work. And like I had a when I went out to the training, we were at a racetrack. I got a video on my Instagram where we chase a race car around a track and we did the training at that same location. And they had a Wi-Fi dish that was like a 2.4 Wi-Fi dish, and the radios and the drones were also 2.4. And every time these guys would go to this one corner of the track, they were like learning how to fly and they were following the track, their drones would just like lose control and crash. And we're like, what's going on? Like the first guy that did it kind of sucked. He was an active duty guy in the
Oh shit.
army.
All
And
right.
like
Yeah.
he we were like, oh, maybe you should maybe like stick to like rifles or whatever. Maybe not do the drone thing. But the other people in his squad were really good. And so there was a lieutenant that was there, and she was actually pretty good at flying. But she also then crashed, and like the third guy in the squad also crashed the corner. Like, okay, something's up. And I grabbed like a signal analyzer, and sure enough, 2.4 was spiking. We like walked around the track till finally we got. I was like, where could it be? And it was this dish that was right next to our like the building that we were in for the training, like the classroom section of the training. But hey, we got training aids out of it. We picked up the drones, we took them into the classroom, and we swapped out the radios on them and repaired all the other stuff that had broken. And you know, that's just part of flying. So
No, I mean, and
yeah, then
then
we.
you know and you understand as somebody who might be out there doing it, like, hey, this is what to look for. I don't know if you guys walked them through like the signal analyzer and all that, but like that's the valuable like experience I think that goes with these things is contextual learning.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing. Like it was again, like it's there's no accidents in training. There's always just, you know, you get training aids made out of stuff something. So it was really cool. It was also fun. Like I got to use my signal analyzer instead of just being like a nerd who was just like, you know, having a signal analyzer in his backpack for no other reason than he's a nerd. But like it was just really you know, it was really cool being able to like pick that up, figure out where that stuff was and show them, hey, you know, like yeah, but your Wi-Fi for using, you know. Actually, I'm not sure what Starlink is using frequency wise, but like if you're using other equipment that's in this range, you're going to have this sort of interference, and they were able to pick that up. So, yeah.
No, that's, I mean, it's again, I'll say it's really cool that there's actually training classes and courses out there for this kind of thing. Instead of just like, because like everyone thinks they can fly a drone, right? It's just like anything else. Everyone thinks they can because they own one. Like, oh, I know I don't need to take a class to learn how to shoot because I've been hunting all my life. Like, well, nah, you probably want to maybe learn some things from people that know a little bit more than you in the
Yeah.
applications which you want to be proficient in. And certainly I think that, you know, as we look at the ways we can use them here as civilians, right? Especially because I think you're mentioning a lot of these devices now, it's easy to put cameras on them so they can feed back to like your cell phone and stuff. And it doesn't even have to be the most like, this is the thing I want people to understand. It doesn't have to be out in the woods. Like, I mean, if you want to, you totally should. Small unit tactics are great and everything. But like, if you keep one, even a small one, even like a small shitty one with a functional camera in a city could probably do you a lot of good as we're seeing like kind of this obnoxious behavior around the country right now with these protests and everything, you know, which I anticipated when Trump won the election. I was like, watch, we're gonna see this the same shit we saw
Oh,
4 years
yeah.
ago, pallets full of
Suddenly
cinder
it's back.
blocks and
How
shit.
it's just magic how that happens.
Yeah, it's incredible. But if you have one of these
They
drone
also, those people
devices, you
probably buy
can.
holosuns and sleep well at night too. I'm just gonna throw it out
Oh,
there. So
probably. But that's up to you. Yeah. But I mean, like, you can, if you're, if your internet is down or whatever the hell happens, like, or you don't want to rely on GPS, you can use a drone to find either someplace safe to go, a safer route to get you to the freeway or something. Like, there's a lot of applications outside just like using it to try and, drop bodies. I think that that's, I think that's where, I hope that's where a lot of people's minds go when they think about how to utilize drones is intelligence gathering, reconnaissance and things like that. I think a lot of guys are like, oh, I'll just put a napalm balloon on the bottom of my drone. Like, cool. Stay away from me. Don't forget where I live. I don't want anything to do with you.
It's like the same people that are like they have the mentality of, oh, it's okay, I don't have to prepare for anything, I'll just come to your house. Or it's the like, it's okay, I don't have to prepare, I'm just gonna go get loot drops, I'm gonna raid people's houses. You're like, no, this is not the mindset you want to have. You want to have the full, again, it's capability to build in. And if you're able just to plan a little bit, you can get through a lot. And again, like you said, like the route planning and figuring out reconnaissance, if you're stuck downtown, knowing where this stuff is huge. Or just, natural disaster again, roads get swept out. You don't want to have to go down that road and then backtrack because it's like, efficient, like just in terms of like keeping fuel efficient in that situation is that might mean that you're without a car pretty quickly if you do that enough times.
Yeah, I well, and that it plays into a whole bunch of other things with, don't leave your car with below half a tank and everything else. But, it's a good point nonetheless because that kind of stuff does happen. It runs down because you had a bad week or something. You were going to get it after work that day, and then you didn't, and now you're stuck, in whatever area. What do you like? Let me ask you this. So, because I think there's a learning curve here, and you talked about like obviously there's need for training and classes and like the right ways to do this. What do entry level units like cost people? Or, I mean, I'm sure there's always a cheaper device people can find out there. I think I've seen stuff online as cheap as like $50, and at that point, I really question what you're getting quality wise. But what do these units like run, and what should people stay away from?
So you want to like the real question there is like, do you want to just buy parts or do you want to buy like a fully equipped drone? So like again, the Hourglass, they're fully like built out and you want to just go gung ho into it, right? So like they go from like 1500 to 5500 is what we have on the site. That's the thermal version with that's the 5500 one. But like from a very entry level, you can get in to a kit for like a pretty good drone for about $300. Again, it's not going to compete with that really high end, but you can get in for that. Actually, and I guess your people can't, they're not going to be able to see this, but I got like a little 5-inch drone on my desk right now, and it's a Chinese made drone. It's about I think it's $150. It came with the training. So like when you go do training, like at the base level, you're going to get a you get the drone included with it, and you take it home and all the goggles and stuff. So,
That's really cool, actually.
so you get to take it home. So this is the one that I got for my training. But yeah, these are like $150, and then goggles and everything else. You're probably looking around like 500 to get in. But you can also get you don't have to necessarily go with a 5-inch. The cool thing with like the larger drones, so like the Hourglass is a 10-inch drone. So and that's size is based off like the size of the props, like the diameter of the props. So this is a 5-inch drone that has 5-inch props on it. It's pretty small. Again, it's like the body of it's about the size of my hand, just for the people that can't see. And it's got arms that go out from there. But it would fit like in my backpack, no problem. The Hourglass is a 10-inch drone, so it's like if you're gonna pack it, it's gonna be on the outside of your backpack at that size. It's really big. It's like double or triple the size of a 5-inch drone. And the cool thing, like, and then you can also get things that are super small called tiny whoops or nano whoops, and they're like literally fit in your hand, and you can get those for like $150 or maybe even less. I think maybe $80 just for the drone. And the cool thing with those is that they have ducted propellers on them, and so you can fly them through your house really well. Like if you want to do the CQB stuff, like a tiny whoop is like perfect for that. They have little bitty like radios and little bitty like batteries, so they can't fly for very long and they can't transmit very far. But if you're just going around your house, like they're a ton of fun. You can like sit down on your couch and like fly it underneath your couch. Like it's really cool. And so
I don't think my dogs are going to appreciate that, but I kind of want
no,
to
but like it'll be
do
hilarious though to see them react to it. They'll just be
it
terrorized.
now.
But like the reason why you want to go with a bigger size drone is not just like payload capacity or anything like that, is that you can carry bigger batteries, you can carry obviously more payload, but you also get more stability up in the sky and more efficient flights. You can go a lot further. So like it's a eventually if you get so big that like you're really having to keep the weight of that drone up in the air, you're gonna have like a thing, but like it's kind of like a larger airframe for like a like it's a lot smoother to fly in a Boeing 747 than it is to fly in a Cessna. So like
Yeah,
if
of
you're dealing
course.
with air and stuff like that, so if you're doing outside stuff, an hourglass is really good. If you want to do like supply drops, recon, all that stuff, that's where that comes in. If you want to fly inside, go 5 inch or less and get something ducted in.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. How do these things do in like adverse weather conditions and stuff? I mean, I'm
Yeah.
assuming that an easy or a gentle rain is probably not going to be that bad, but how do they do with like, storms or high wind or things like that?
Yeah, and now that you mentioned, so I'm blanking on the exact term for what it is, but like they're like drones, you can actually like a lot of them, like the hourglass is actually set up like this too, where it's basically kind of waterproof, and you set all the electronics into like an epoxy. That's not really epoxy, but the guys at COE, if they listen to this, they're gonna hate me for forgetting the name of this actual
Are you talking
process.
about potting?
No, it's like it's called like particles. I forgot the name of it. Anyway. I apologize, but anyway, just take my word on it. It's a process where you can dip the electronics into this basically waterproofing, and it kind of seals up all the things, so won't be a short when they get wet. So like light rain is going to probably be all right. Like we don't recommend flying in the rain, but like if that's what your mission dictates, then yeah, you should be good to go. They do the same process, and like they might put like floaties on the drone, and like you can land them in the water and like totally submerge them, and they pop back out. So like that's kind of the level that they're at. And also the cool thing with like the hourglass as opposed to this 5 inch that I've got. In this 5 inch, the electronics are completely exposed. Again, too, I'm showing the camera. I don't know why I'm doing that, but the electronics are completely exposed. On the hourglass, it's got like an actual like body over it, so like the amount of water that's getting into to the electronics
Minimal, yeah.
is minimal. So yeah, so there's that. So anyway, there are ways you can get around that. Again, you don't want to induce a short. You also want to be really careful when you, if you have gotten your drone wet and you're dealing with the power supply or anything like that, you want to be really careful because you don't want to electrocute yourself. So if there's a chance of water or anything that might induce a short on that drone, just take care. Just kind of my PSA. But yeah, look, you can find a little
Is
bit of
that
rain.
a realistic like issue with like what I mean, I guess like what's the strength of power on those units?
So like I think
Okay.
less like getting shocked is more the thing, but more inducing a short and causing either the electronics to either fry themselves on the drone, but also you don't want to cause a short to the battery. So like the other thing with FPV drones is that they use LiPo batteries, not lithium ion. And so the reason for that is you can dump a lot more power into the system. So like in when you want to go 80 miles an hour, like right now, you can it's basically like giving you extra like you can basically rev the engine a lot faster or rev the motors a lot faster. So the problem with LiPo batteries is that they have a higher chance of exploding and catching fire.
Oh,
So like
good.
if you don't charge them right, like you gotta learn how to use the charger. Again, this is stuff that we cover on the training side of things. Like I'm not worried about it because I've like learned how to do it, and they take it really seriously on how to train it, how to charge this stuff. But you kind of have to manually set it. Like, hey, this is how big a battery I have, and you got to tell the charger this stuff, and this is how charged I want it. And it's not like 100%. You tell it like I want to charge it to like 4.2 volts, and if you charge it, if you set it to like 4.8, you're going to put too much power in it. You could make the battery, expand and blow up and catch fire. And they're like, again, I don't want to like over threaten this and make this seem like, oh man, I don't want these in my house. But like, because they're fine if you know how to use them. But like, if you when they start to combust, like they're self sustaining on the fire. So like. You can't like put them in water and put them out. They'll go underwater. So like
Oh boy.
you can't smother them. Yeah. So anyway, it's one of those things where it's like, know what you're doing with your batteries, but like I'm not worried about it. Like I got,
So just don't be
but
retarded. Learn the right way to play with electricity, and you'll be okay.
yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the more the thing that you want to make sure that you're aware of with adverse conditions, look at it that way. But again, too, it's something that you train through. Like again, like you're not worried about dropping your gun in mud and having it explode on you like Bugs Bunny whenever you're going through that. So you got to just know what you're doing. So,
Well, man, I we've already actually like
yeah.
hit. Oh, I think we were actually past like an hour, man. This has been really awesome and insightful. If people are looking to check out what you guys are doing or more information, or you guys, I know you post a lot on Instagram and stuff. Where can people find you and where can they get a hold of you at?
Yeah, so constellationresponse.com. If you go there, like after like a few seconds, there'll be a mailing list that'll pop up too. It'll pop up, super annoying, but go just give in to the annoying pop up and sign up for the mailing list. You'll get all the stuff you need from there if you email your thing. Follow me on Instagram. I'm also on Twitter or X at ConResponse, and same thing on Facebook too. We got a Facebook page, so everything that I post on Instagram and it goes to both Twitter and to Facebook as well. So probably social media is going to get you the most information, but if you just want something every other week or once a week or something like that, I can get you a download there. But yeah, dude, I can't believe it's already been an hour. That's insane.
Yeah, that's how it goes. It's crazy. But I mean, this is, I mean, for me, it's really helpful. Like I said, I didn't know, not that I feel like I walked away from this with a ton. Like I need to take a class or something. That's just how my brain works. But we got into a whole bunch of different like shit here that I didn't think that drones were really for. You know what I mean? Like I had a, but again, that's more me. And I think that as this becomes more mainstream, right? That perception battle gets easier, people understand more, and we'll probably see even more development and leveraging these in different ways. So it's kind of, I'm sure for you, like a really exciting time to be you know, in the industry.
Yeah, no, it's been insane. Just again, there's a lot of promise. There's a lot of tech. There's a lot of stuff we got to get caught up on. It's like worrying and exciting all at the same time. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds awesome, man. But I appreciate you taking the time. We'll definitely connect again in the future. We can follow up on this, and hopefully, I'll actually have done something with a drone other than like I think I've held one before. As exciting as that
Yeah.
is, a lot. So,
Hit me up anytime. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm super responsive on all the media platforms. Anything that I can do to get out of doing the actual work, I'll do. So hit me up, and if anyone has any
perfect.
questions, let me know.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And stay safe out there. And we will be in touch, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, there you guys go. I know some of you guys have been asking for this discussion for a while. It won't it won't be the last. For sure. There's not that I doubted it before, like I said, I just there's certain things in this community where it becomes like a trend and then people are like really obsessed with it for a short period of time, and then it kind of fizzles out. And something I want to avoid is like jumping on those bandwagons. But clearly, like I didn't have any idea what we were going to get into in this discussion. And obviously, Rob has done a lot of work in the drone realm to make, you know, bring a better product to market, to understand the ways to do that, the use cases and the applications and the possibilities for these tools. It's like obviously, I think we all had a couple things in our minds when we think about drones. Maybe some of you guys are only really interested in those couple applications. So, you know, like reconnaissance, right? So, as a small team or small element, you want to fly it over the tree line and, you know, do recon, get imaging. You want a medium grade camera on your unit because you don't want to spend a bunch of money. I get it, and that like that's the most you want to be able to do. For some of us, I think you guys have a little more nefarious goals potentially with payloads and things like that. And I feel like anytime you use the word payload, you're talking more about dropping some kind of some kind of explosive device. Not that I condone that, to be very clear, for legal reasons. But obviously, this isn't going anywhere. And the cool part with this is that as more and more people are becoming interested, just like anything else in any other sector of industry, as it becomes more and more mainstream, as the market for those products, the demand for that technology increases, the investment increases. And as we have more breakthroughs, more developments, we find better ways to create the components and the parts, the pieces, right? Like we spoke briefly, but we did speak about having American-made motors, right? And you can do it here in the US, but you're going to double your price per unit essentially. And that's something that then kind of, you know, getting not too economical on it, makes this not a great and an ultra attractive product for the market. Like, yes, you'll probably sell some to the people who are like the diehard USA only folks. But really, from a sustainability standpoint, it just doesn't make sense today. Now, does that change in a couple of years? Hopefully so. But there's so much to this, and it's cool that you can even get these like small drones and things that can be used inside buildings and houses and stuff like that that are going to be advantageous in sectors of law enforcement, potentially for those of us that know how to work this stuff really well, maybe in civilian applications, you know, I don't want to get to like the, some of you guys, I'm sure the zombie apocalypse, you know, you can go ahead and fly a drone ahead of you so you don't run into the mass hordes of the undead. I don't freaking know. But the potential here, especially as we get into like talking about what's on the horizon, like, you know, stuff that's already in common use at the military level, but hasn't usually, because it's cost prohibitive, right, hasn't made it to the civilian market yet. We're talking about integration with mesh networks, but then that step further, right, that integration with AI learning where you can teach, and it's not just programming a device to run and fly a certain route. I think programming is something, if you have the payload capacity to put a, you know, a certain size computer and board and everything on there, that's one thing. But when we're talking about machine learning, when we're talking about AI, and this is something that's being pushed in all sorts of like aspects of life. And, you know, because I'm hearing about it at work. I just had it on a team meeting I had in my day job today is, hey, we need to really embrace AI because, you know, this is something that's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. The potential and the possibilities here, at least to a certain degree, are almost endless. And as it learns and does more, you know, has less hallucinations, and certain ones are better than others. And, you know, you could go down a whole rabbit hole talking about artificial intelligence and the possibilities it brings with it. Now, taking that and applying that within the scope of drone technology and what we're able to do with drones, when we talk about things like search and rescue, and we just, I think it was Isle Royale Park, you know, northern Michigan, I believe. I saw an article that two campers in a very remote campground, so it is a designated camping area, but still very remote. And when you get that far north here in Michigan, it gets a little bit dicey. But two campers found dead there. And those are the kinds of things like, hey, I don't know if they, you know, they're found at a campground, so that leads to other things. But people who get lost, you know, we've had other guests on. I know I'm thinking Ian from Rune Nation, Ian Strembeck, talking, you know, about that kind of stuff where people get lost in the mountains out by where he's at and stuff. And certainly it's something where, hey, if you need search and rescue, people don't often invest the money in the good Garmin watches and stuff with satellite connectivity because they're cost prohibitive and they don't want to just buy a watch, you know, just when they go hiking. They bite off more than they can chew, and then they are stuck out at night and they freeze to death or whatever. And these kinds of capabilities with drones, with AI integration, could certainly be a solve for something like that, because while you may not save every life, obviously it can drastically cut down the time to get a response to you. So, I mean, that's just one instance where it could be world changing is the search and rescue piece. Now, obviously on the military front of it, yeah, there's so many different uses, so many different applications, and it's really cool to hear that we're actually seeing like structured curriculum built by companies to help teach people how to pilot these things effectively. And the racing thing is one part of it, right? But there's also, I'm going to assume here, nuance to piloting outside of racing, knowing, you know, how to navigate high winds, things like that, and stuff like, I don't know, the nuance to that, I have absolutely no idea. I'm not even going to talk about it because I'm just going to sound like a moron to somebody who does know. But there's a ton here, you guys. This is certainly something where we're seeing these units. And even, yes, maybe like the small little Chinese ones that we were kind of, I don't say bitching about, but talking about maybe not the you know, being the best unit because of the potential for being shut off and then limited, you know, hey, that can be carried in a GP pouch on a back panel of your plate carrier or of your kit or in your rucksack. So you can obviously deploy that as an operator out in the field. And hey, now you're not dependent on, you know, clear, or you're less dependent on cloud cover and things for, or I guess lack of cloud cover for the overhead drone and ISR feed, if you're talking about it in a military context, but then also as a law enforcement context, you're chasing somebody through the woods and you have these manhunts and things that go on. Certainly have had enough guests and friends in the law enforcement space. I know these things happen. And if you lose sight of those people, it becomes a huge problem. And then you're talking about a very, very large area of containment, which means resources. It's pulled from other, you know, AOs and things and other precincts and things like that, where it becomes a very large problem because you have to try to now contain to try and catch and capture that element or that individual. Well, now if we have this drone technology, maybe that's a solve for it. So certainly we could go down so many different rabbit holes with where this becomes applicable, where this becomes important. I'm trying to avoid getting into the videos that you guys love out of Ukraine. Cause every time I have somebody send one to me, they're like, oh, this is so fucking insane. This is awesome. And I'm like, I don't get the allure to it. Like, yeah, it's wild to see the innovation, and I can certainly appreciate the skill and everything that went into weaponizing that platform, turning it into a useful tool by people who are, my assumption is that they're fighting to protect their home from the Russian invaders, and fight that war over there and things. I can appreciate the innovation to it, but I don't like look for those videos and go out of my way to like celebrate that, because I think it's just, it's kind of weird, but it is very neat that we're able to take stuff like off the shelf drones and do these kinds of things with them, understanding the payload capacities, understanding, hey, it's, you know, a certain model may be quoted at a 5-pound payload because that's what it's able to do over a sustained period of time. But maybe you can push that to 7.5 or 8 pounds in a single use because, I mean, it's a bomb, so you're not worried about that. There's probably some degree of testing and evaluation and validation that goes into all of that shit. But it all comes back to the capability of having drone technology available to you. And now I even know that like there's, they're about in line, I think, with like a Wilcox mount, but I know they make like flip down mounts for your tactical helmet that fit into like a night vision shroud for these goggles. So if you're somebody who is operating in a tactical environment, and you need to run a helmet and you need to run kit and everything, you can have flip down goggles for the purpose of deploying your drone, or maybe even you keep them in a side pouch, much like we do, oftentimes with our night vision, where you can then, you know, reach out and hook up that night vision device, your goggles, whatever, your 1431s, 1531s, or your DTMVSs. Again, shout out Custom Night Vision. If you guys are looking into getting into night vision, go check out Custom, like 100%, go look at that. And then if it's just swapping out the mounts really aren't that hard to swap. They lock in, but they also, it's a pretty easy lever to just pop those G24 style mounts out and pop in something different. Now, in the heat of battle, might not be the most desirable thing that you want to do, but just out operationally in the field, certainly something you can do with a reasonable couple, you know, minutes of time to, you know, pop off one mount, stow it, and pop on the new one. and the worst you probably have to deal with in that regard would be an adjustment to your counterweight, or maybe just living with an unbalanced helmet and some neck stress for a while. Not ideal, but it is what it is. So hopefully this whole discussion, you guys, was very valuable and helpful to you. Certainly it's something I'm intrigued about and would like to learn more, have more discussions. I know there's some guys out there doing some really, really cool stuff. Certainly go check out, Constellation Response and what Rob's doing. I think it's awesome seeing a company that, I mean, just started in the last year or so, right, that's dedicated to bringing these solutions forward in better ways. Like, that's the kind of innovation and forward thinking that we need in our community to help us all be more capable, more effective. And it's not just geared towards, you know, like some of these, he was talking about with defense contracting and stuff, like some of these companies develop these awesome tools, but they're only ever geared towards the military. And it takes, in some instances, decades before it trickles down to the civilian space. Thankfully, being 2025, the access to technology, information we have, people like Rob are able to take these kinds of tools, these kinds of solutions, and a healthy amount of passion, obviously, and transform that into stuff that can be had at least a reasonable price point. I would say nothing that's really worth its weight it's not going to be super cheap. So some of the stuff, it's going to have a little bit more of a price tag to it, but it's going to last. It's going to give you the capability stretch that you're looking for. And you're going to actually enjoy using it. You're going to get more out of it. Instead of like, you know, and we talked about it, like there's some cheap stuff out there. And as long as you know the limitations of it, just like if you're using Gen 2 night vision versus Gen 3, or a short barrel rifle versus a long barrel rifle, as long as you know and understand the limitations of your tools, you're going to be more effective than if you didn't have them in the first place. But as always, that relies on your knowledge, you as the operator and as the end user. So hopefully this is awesome and interesting for you guys. Drop some comments, drop some feedback. Let me know if you love this stuff. I will get more guests on here to talk about this. We'll get Rob back on. We'll do it, man. All really, really good things. But that is all I have for you guys in this week's discussion. I appreciate you all hanging out. Please take a minute to make sure you hit the like, make sure you hit the subscribe. That stuff goes a really, really long way to keeping this podcast going and spreading the message. You know, tell your friends, have them subscribe. You know, we're doing great with listeners and we're growing every day. It's awesome to watch. It's been an incredible, we're at the beginning of June. It's been about 5 years, believe it or not, you guys. We've grown every year, and it's an amazing feeling. So I'm happy that this is helpful. Like I said, if you guys enjoy this kind of stuff, the likes, the shares, the follows, those go a really long way. But reach out, send me a message, let me know what you want to hear about, and I'll get those guests on. You know, I'm always open to having a conversation with people, and bringing the message, the lessons, right, that are going to be most helpful to you, the audience. And I don't care if I look like an idiot in the process. I mean, look at this conversation. I have no idea what I'm doing with a drone, but I know it's something people have asked for, and I know it's something that I had some reservations at first about, and, you know, here we are. So thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening to me. We have another episode lined up for you next week. Until then, you guys be safe out there, and like we always say, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.